Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
This is Internet Marketing. Hello everybody and welcome to Internet Marketing episode 208, brought to you by Site Visibility at sitevisibility.com. And in today's show, Kelvin talks to digital content marketer Ryan Skinner of Velocity Partners.
So Ryan, can you tell us a little bit about yourself, your background and Velocity Partners and kind of, I suppose, what's the story behind Ryan?
My name is Ryan Skinner. I'm an American digital marketer working for Velocity Partners in London. We're a specialist B2B tech and content marketing agency. I work on the account side, which means basically that I help our usually tech clients make the most out of their digital marketing and get leads in through their website and all that good stuff. And generally using content marketing type techniques and tactics.
And do you think there's something about kind of content marketing and B2B that particularly kind of goes quite well together?
Sure. B2B is typically, you know, those long decision-making processes where there's lots of it's usually a slow process and lots of rounds of decision-making and different stakeholders. So content marketing works quite well in that perspective, in that it's the pull that the market pulls the information they want as they need it to support their decision-making process. So it allows it to go according to their purchasing rhythm, their sales rhythm, which makes a lot of sense. And it allows the company that's marketing to try and develop content and materials that meet the needs of their buyers as they go through that process. So there's a good mesh there.
Do you find that there's kind of almost a general pattern of how there's kind of, the path that people take through information, you know, that people tend to maybe download a general guide, or, you know, that kind of is kind of common across B2B businesses, or is it actually completely different for every business sector and even potentially different for different clients within the same sector?
There's some generalities. But you can oftentimes find that sometimes people will come to a B2B site and they'll be ready to buy. And we found instances where a vendor will try to get them to read this ebook or to read this blog post, but they're actually just ready to buy and they can't find the place on the site where it's just, let me talk to a salesperson and buy your product. So you don't want to get in the way of a sales process. And that's something that we keep in mind all the time. But at the same time, yes, I mean, there's like a 4 or 5 step process. Usually, oftentimes, companies will be researching issues that they're facing without even knowing exactly necessarily the problem that they're trying. They'll have a pain point. For example, they're struggling with their invoicing process. They don't know exactly what's wrong, so they'll be Googling, they'll be doing their own research, reading articles about what other people are doing. They haven't really defined what the problem is, nor do they know the solution. So content that starts helping people define their problems up front is usually really, really good content, in that you're taking them at their pain point and starting to give them a vocabulary to talk about it before you even start talking about your products or anything like that. And then you proceed to, you know, helping them define more narrowly, and then they're going to get to a phase where they're actually considering different products because they've determined what type of solutions they're after, and then finally they're going to make a call and at a certain point, you know, when they're going to make that final decision, usually the marketing steps back and sales takes over.
And you talked there about kind of some of the different types of content that you know that a B2B business would potentially be putting together. How have you found the process of kind of coming up with the ideas for those pieces? Because I suppose, you know, once you've got them in place and it's working effectively, it's kind of, you know, it all feels self-evident. But kind of how did you come about the kind of, you know, the process of deciding what those pieces of content should be? You know, do you have to ask the question first?
Yeah, well, yes, I would argue that you should. I mean, there's obviously working out the strategy of what you want to say to the people. That is your high-level strategic issues. What is special about your product? What kinds of people are going to be interested in your kind of product? What kinds do you not particularly want to attract? The kinds, for example, you find a lot of businesses that want to focus on other large businesses because they'll find that the cost of the sale and the cost of the maintenance of, for example, a smaller business that doesn't bring in the revenue isn't going to be sufficient. So in their content marketing, they can practically, between the lines, say to those kinds of companies, we're not going to be interesting for you. We're not going to provide the level of service that you might need because you don't have expertise on your side that can pick up and use our software, for example, or that kind of thing. So yeah, I think having some strategy up front to determine what kind of messages do you want to stand behind is typical marketing messaging and positioning, but then applying that to specific pieces of content that are going to be useful for the people you're targeting.
Potentially, if, you know, the main way that you would measure a piece of content perhaps traditionally would be the number, you know, in a B2B context, of the number of leads that it generates or the number of sales that it generates. Does that potentially become quite tricky if you're then using the, particularly the lead stage, you know, in terms of if you're trying to pre-qualify that traffic?
Yeah, well, they're often working with, for example, marketing automation systems. So you're starting to see who's coming in. And of course, with content marketing, you're oftentimes going to want to have a pretty good relationship with your salespeople so that they're telling you what kinds of people are going to make for good sales, what kinds of people, when you get into a telephone call, are going to make for what they call a sales qualified lead. So you're going to have to work all those things out, preferably in advance, so that your metrics make sense. Mm-hmm. Obviously, if you're developing content that's getting lots of downloads, potentially lots of form fills, but the people that are doing that aren't going to be ever interesting for sales, then you'll have some pretty looking metrics. You'll have a big numbers maybe, but it's not going to be the type of stuff that moves the dial on your bottom line. And mm-hmm. that's obviously not going to have lead to a lot of smiles in the C-suite mm-hmm. up top.
And you talked there about marketing automation. I think, and there's a kind of a huge kind of connection that's being made in many cases between content marketing and marketing automation. From your experience of kind of dealing with those kind of pieces of, I suppose, platforms rather than even pieces of software, you know, what's kind of the things that someone, if they're potentially looking at deciding on going down the marketing automation route, the things they should be looking for, or the things that you've kind of seen that you wish some of those solutions did a little bit better?
Well, marketing automation is it's a complicated piece of software to use in a really good way. We find a lot of companies that are using marketing automation software are effectively only using them as email blast tools. And they can often work like that, but for the more serious marketing automation vendors, I think like Marketo and Eloqua and even HubSpot, they know that they're not delivering the real value if people are just using it in that respect. Then they should just use a typical email blast type tool, a MailChimp or something of that mm-hmm. nature, which is going to be far cheaper. So if you're going to go down the marketing automation route, it is a bit complicated, and you're going to want to, you know, plug into that whole value. And then the question becomes, do you have the time and the resources to devote to it? Because if you're spending, you know, a day a month at it, you're going to have to relearn it every time you come to it. It's going to be a waste. Mm-hmm. So a lot of companies, you see a lot of kind of consultancies popping up of companies who do it for you effectively. So they start doing a lot of this, setting up the funnels for you, start setting up the flows and monitoring it for you and feeding back into your system. We do that for a few clients where we effectively set things up for them and monitor it for them, basically because we have some experience with it and we like to show that our content is working and leading to revenue and sales qualified leads and business effective.
And I know that you've been, you know, as a kind of organization, you've been very effective at kind of promoting yourself using kind of content marketing. Is there any kind of particular lessons you've learned from kind of, you know, some of your slide shares that I came across that kind of was my initial kind of interaction with you as an organization? What experiences have you learned kind of doing this for yourself, and how does that differ potentially from doing it for clients? Because I mean, some of our listeners are indeed agencies and suppliers of digital marketing services.
Sure. I mean, for us, it has been very self-taught. The content marketing workbook, for example, which was written, I think, like 4 or 5 years ago, long before I joined Velocity, is still leading to a significant, or was until we took the forms off recently, was leading to a significant flow of our leads. That's a 5-year-old document. So, I mean, just that told us, you know, that this content marketing, a good investment and a good piece of content marketing that's well presented and it gets a lot of backlinks, basically that succeeds, is a tremendous long-term investment. And in the same hand, you can see pieces of content. We haven't seen it as much ourselves, but you see it now and then as people invest a lot in a piece of content and it doesn't get that initial traction and they don't get short-term or long-term results. So there can be a big difference in how things perform for you on the bottom line. But our recent slide shares, Doug did the three poisonous metaphors slide share and then the crap slide share. And those were real eye-openers in the power of that SlideShare platform. They led to just a significant amount, I mean, thousands upon thousands of views. And a lot of people just saying, love that, do it for us, please. So that kind of thing is really, really valuable. And you see, I think, on the agency side, agencies that become known for doing certain things really well, maybe, you know, it could be for us starting to go on this kind of SlideShare rant type thing. But also like the Jest 3s and what they do with infographics. Once you get really well known for something, then that attracts a lot of business. That's that kind of specialization and expertise building.
And do you find kind of when, you know, the process of some of these slide shares and, you know, potentially things that you've done similarly for clients that, you know, kind of almost the way that most people tend to use slide share is that they use it to kind of extract additional value from something that they've delivered kind of in person. Do you find that it kind of potentially requires quite a different sort of style of content to really, you know, take advantage of the platform?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I did a presentation last fall for an event in the States. And the presentation was very much oral. The slides were very visual. And I went ahead and put it on SlideShare. I have to do a recording for it because without the talk track, it's, you know, the value just isn't there. You see a lot of people doing great visual presentations where effectively each slide is just maybe a visual and a word, which is great for when they're giving, you know, a 2-minute spiel around it. But when it just sits on SlideShare, it's not doing too much. So you'll notice that the rants that we've done, it's obviously very all self-contained. You don't have to have a talk track next to it. So I mean, there's that for sure. And I think, you know, there's two routes that people are often using SlideShare. One is, as you say, kind of the trying to extract a little bit more value from a presentation that they've given. So they put it there and maybe get in some more leads in that way. The other way is people who are building, basically, it's kind of an ebook light or a self-contained piece of content that goes on the SlideShare platform. And that's what crap or three poisonous metaphors were.
And how do you feel about kind of the world of content marketing? You know, I organized an event called The Content Marketing Show, which kind of perhaps has, a slightly SEO route, even if that's not necessarily the direction we want to go. And how do you feel about this kind of like potential, the term being used in potentially quite different circumstances to mean quite different things? Like to the extent that the content marketing, I think it's the Institute in the UK, are rebranded from contract publishing, which is kind of potentially very different from...
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
You know, a kind of white hat version of link building, or very different for, you know, building social stuff that's, you know, designed to get shared very widely on social networks, but potentially might not lead to links. Do you know, is that kind of a actually a problem, or is it something that kind of like doesn't really matter? As long as you know what the objectives of your campaign is, you can do it, and it doesn't really matter what the label is.
Well, I think it is a problem, and I think it's a problem for marketers to a great degree. And you see the whole content marketing field is very hot. Something like the e-consultancy report said something like 90% said it was going to grow big time this year. 70% were going to invest more in it, which was the highest tactic growth in terms of any tactic in marketing. So there's a huge flush, people pouring into it, but there's no, I mean, Content Marketing Institute and probably the Content Marketing Association you refer to, I'm sure they have their definitions, but there's very different ideas of what it is and what's part of it. And of course, you'll find the SEO agencies are doing content marketing as an SEO agency. It's basically like a new form of SEO. And you find the contract publishers doing it in their own specific way. You'll find an agency that's special, like Jest3 and Infographics. They're going to be doing it in their way. Analysts are producing content marketing, and everyone's doing it in their own specific way. And I think if you're a marketer, it can be very confusing to understand what is this person actually meaning by content marketing. It's a very diffuse term. I made the infographic, the Content Marketing Partners infographic, with that understanding that there is this explosion in the space, and not a lot of, I guess, efforts to try and encapsulate all the different directions that there are within it. And I think that was my effort, was to try and define, okay, here we found 20 basically different kinds of partners, taxonomy, and then said, okay, roughly, and this is bringing in, of course, huge stereotypes, this is how they think about it. And it's always going to be stereotypes. You know, an SEO agency that's very advanced will have a very different idea than, you know, a very, very dirt cheap type SEO agency. And same thing on the content marketing side, same thing in the contract publisher side or freelancer or what have you. So trying to define these and at least give people a starter in a way of thinking, hey, this is how this could be. So it's growing. It's a very diffuse thing, and it's, I think, very confusing for the end market.
Yeah, I suppose it's exciting in the sense that, you know, it's good that it's kind of clearly striking a chord. But I suppose, you know, kind of someone with a bit of a vested interest in you know, the kind of understanding of the term, it does feel that there's a real danger of kind of almost becoming the, you know, the next big data, where big data is being used in such diverse, you know, potential uses with kind of like, you know, very little consistency in how it's being used, and very quickly burning out as a term and, you know, as a useful way of describing things.
Yeah. I mean, you saw we recently did a post where we talked about the hype around it. And I think we, along with anyone else who works in the field, will agree the hype isn't really all that useful. The content marketing itself is useful. The hype isn't. We had, you know, plenty of business doing content marketing before it became huge. And I'm sure we're getting in lots of leads and lots of interest, but it's not necessarily always to our advantage, because we're getting in people who have a very skewed idea of what content marketing is before we would teach them. And it would make, we can teach them in such a way that it made sense for us and for them. Now they're coming to us with their own ideas of what content marketing is, which, you know, we could come from any potential source, and sometimes not necessarily a good source. So what we'd have to effectively kind of unlearn them if we were going to make them into a good customer and successful with our effort together with them.
And I was talking to someone recently at a conference, and they were kind of making the argument that the lines between B2B and B2C were blurring, and that to a certain extent, as a kind of definition, it wasn't that useful anymore, because, you know, the kind of the approaches that people use become ever more similar, even though the names for them might be different. So, you know, what a B2C company probably wouldn't call something a white paper, but what they might produce might be very similar to what a white paper would do in a kind of downloadable guide or, you know, frequently asked questions kind of thing. But do you think there is kind of a fundamental difference in approach still that's useful to kind of, for someone who perhaps making career decisions might want to kind of specialize in one area and build up a core competency?
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely, I mean, there's a lot of B2B firms that are very consumer feeling. I mean, if you look at like 37 Signals, the Basecamp kind of product, effectively it's a B2B product, but it has a very consumer kind of feel because it's very much, you know, you can buy that sucker and start using it without having, you know, the huge investment. Mm-hmm. So obviously that's something that can be marketed as almost a consumer play.
Yeah.
And you know, in B2B, we often talk about the need to target. You're not targeting a business. You're not writing to a business. You're writing to a person, which is true. Mm-hmm. There's been a lot of studies that say, despite the fact that we all think we're making our decisions based upon a lot of rational criteria, there's a lot of emotion involved. Mm-hmm. So we often, in developing our content, try to play off of emotion, try to play off of people's frustration with either existing types of software or problems that just don't want to go away. So we're trying to help them define those and to shape those into a specific solution. So yes, you're always talking to people, but at the same time, I mean, consumer products, I don't see, you know, a typical B2B play having, you know, advert on the Super Bowl, that kind of thing. I mean, there's certain directions that they're not likely to go. So, I mean, there's still a difference, definitely, whether they're converging in certain respects, they are. Yeah.
And do some businesses find that tricky to kind of find that kind of emotional connection and resonance there? Because, you know, in a lot of B2B, you know, you talked about kind of, you know, software services and, you know, many of those types of businesses, they're kind of pretty well equipped to, you know, modern businesses that perhaps don't have legacy approaches to their marketing. So therefore, they're very able to kind of position themselves in new and, you know, potentially different ways. Do you find kind of like longer, more established industries perhaps find it a little bit difficult to kind of break out of that in kind of suit and tie and, you know, RFP kind of mentality?
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of these big companies, some of the older industrial, older tech organizations are still writing as if they were doing their annual report. It's just the all the communications go through committees, but what comes out is just stale and dry as, you know, as can be. And, you know, people see that and it just turns them off pretty much immediately. I think the idea of what is credible is, to a certain degree, has changed because we're expecting a more, a quicker pace of communication, a faster tempo, more, I guess, humanism, more type of feel that there's a person talking to you, is rather than this kind of corporate speak. So yeah, we see that all the time, and we still encounter it oftentimes with people saying, no, we can't say this. It's too informal. We need to take a more formal or a corporate tone. So we find ourselves arguing the side of, no, we're talking to people. We need to be emotional. We need to show empathy for their situation. And we need to speak in a way that's easier for them to that feels that resonates with them.
And do you think spokespeople are a good sort of like initial step into that kind of process of kind of potentially humanizing or at least giving a face to organizations that, you know, because they're ultimately just a collection of individuals?
Spokespersons, I suppose so. I mean, ideally, it'd be a cultural change across a business, and that would oftentimes come down from the leadership. So that would be something that would have to be started at the top and saying, this is how we're going to talk to the market. We're not going to talk to the market like in corporate speak. We're going to talk to the market in normal human terms. That's not going to be done from the bottom up. And it never succeeds that way. So if you can't make that cultural change from the top, it isn't going to happen. And bringing in one spokesperson to suddenly be the easygoing talking guy, if it's not supported from the top, or and it's not really effectively pushed through the entire organization, then it'll be a bit contrived.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly get that. You kind of often get these people come in who have kind of evangelists as their job title. He's perhaps been bought into an organisation, or someone who's kind of within the organisation who's kind of developed a voice or personality of their own, and then they're kind of given the remit of kind of personalising the brand. And although they do make good movements on that, it's kind of, you do sometimes feel that it's kind of a bit of window dressing in some circumstances.
Yeah, I can imagine. It sounds like it's it would be a fresh wind, I'm sure. Potentially they could bring in new ideas. Potentially somebody more senior would see it and recognize the value of it. Or maybe they even commissioned the person to come in and do it. So, I haven't personally had a lot of experience with that kind of thing, but... Mm.
Yeah, can understand the circumstances. And I suppose just to finish up, Ryan, in terms of if someone's kind of, you know, they've listened to our conversation here, they perhaps become a little bit more enthused about, the concept of, concept marketing and the value that can have for them as a B2B business. Any kind of, like, I suppose, really actionable things you can go and do fairly quickly that will, it's not going to solve the problem overnight, but potentially set you on a good path towards, that journey that we all think is really important.
Well, I mean, I can always obviously plug our own ebooks. I think they're very useful. I found them very useful even before I started at Velocity. That is a content marketing workbook, for example, which was made a good 5 years ago. We're updating it now with some newer examples, but I mean, that's pretty useful. We're going to be hosting a hangout in like a week and a half with some of the kind of leading luminaries in the field, Joe Chernov, Ardith Albi, Michael Brenner. These are all pretty big names in the content marketing B2B field. And they're going to be discussing specifically how do you get your stakeholders to invest in content marketing. So that could be of interest. I don't know if this is going to be aired before then. So
I'll make sure we drop a link to it anyway. So I'm sure there'll be a write-up if we do.
It'll be recorded on YouTube. So that would be useful. Otherwise, following content marketing type blogs. Our own blog does, of course, pretty write-up content marketing all the time. Content Marketing Institute eConsultancy has a string of good content marketing posts. So these are all good places to go.
Fantastic. Well, thanks very much for that, Ryan. Really enjoyed that. Some really interesting insights to the world of content marketing, and particularly how it applies to the world of B2B, but also kind of plenty of takeaways for pretty much anyone who's trying to use content to try and get their message out there. So thanks very much for that, Ryan.
Thanks for the opportunity, Kelvin. I really appreciate it.
Well, that's it for today. Thank you so much for listening. You can find us on the internet at www.internetmarketingpodcast.org, where you'll find show notes, links, and instructions on how to subscribe. We would absolutely love to get feedback, comments, and questions from you. If you want to send an email, send it to kelvin.newman@sitevisibility.com. Also, feel free to comment on the website. And if you'd like to use our voice line number, if you're outside of the UK, it's +44 1273 256 150. If you're inside the UK, it's 01273 256 150. And you can leave a voice comment or question and we'll play it on the show. Also, we would absolutely be delighted if you would give us a rating on iTunes itself. Well, that's it for now. Andy White signing off until next week on Internet Marketing.